It's neither a Friday the 13th movie nor a Freaky Friday movie, yet it is more both of those than several things that actually are those. Did that make sense? Don't worry about it. It's Freaky, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yes, hello. My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined here by just a couple of bodies flopping down a big old pyramid. It's Camila Adams.
Once again, I needed to be reminded what we watched last week. Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
I also tried to forget.
But I was reminded that apparently that I said something about so much ass in the last one. And it was
there was a
shocker. Yeah. Where were the
wall cheeks in that movie? I was surprised. There was a long string of people, either on my Facebook or on the Nomia Facebook, I forget which one, that replied to the post. All with the two words, great movie.
Yeah.
Like just over and over again. Great movie, great movie, great movie. Let's make our listeners and or Facebook friends happy by not diving into the demographics of the people who all said that.
Right.
you know, there are people who really admire this. And I think that if you're into a certain kind of action movie and are not into thinking about what you're watching, that sounds more condescending than I mean it. Like if you're just like, I want, you know, an epic, bloody action adventure. Sure. Why the hell not?
Yeah,
it was those things.
Yeah. I saw a tweet too, like recently, that was just like some, I forget what the account was, but it was just like Apocalypto, good or bad. And all these people are like, great movie, great movie. But Mel Gibson's best and blah, 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 da, da, da. And I almost like dipped in there. And I was like, I'm just going to step on right back out.
I can also see that, especially for people in a certain demographic that will remain unnamed, seeing that movie 15 years ago in a theater, being blown away by the craft of it and then not thinking about it for 15 years, you can come back without applying any of your own personal growth and still say the words, great movie.
Right. That's true. Entertainment is complicated.
I think there's a good chance that it's Mel Gibson's worst movie, right? And I liked it. Like, Braveheart is about...
Hacksaw Ridge is so bad.
Yeah, Hacksaw Ridge is probably worse.
Like, all of the stuff before the brutal gore part is so fucking cheesy.
Yeah.
And then the brutal gore part is a brutal gore part.
That's what he does.
I don't think I've seen enough Gibson-directed vehicles to make a hypothesis.
Have you seen
is too small.
Yes.
Have you seen The Passion of the Christ? I don't know if we got
Yeah, totally saw that in the theater. And
I have not seen it.
You know, okay, the only directorial thing, I've seen A Man Without a Face, The Passion of the Christ, and now Apocalypto. That's it. And yeah, I should have stopped at The Man Without a Face.
I mean, look, Braveheart is not a great movie, sorry. But on the other hand, it's Braveheart. He makes a big speech and it's the old times and there's a sex scene, you know, like that looks like it's at the Renaissance Fair. Like on those things, it elevates above Apocalypto. But
definitely a special audience for that one.
And remember, I kind of like it. I gave it a above average score, but on average, we ended up at a 35 2/3 for Apocalypto. It is 69th overall.
I refuse to say the word.
I was waiting for it.
I will not.
35 2/3 is a common rating for us. That is, it's in a three-way tie with The Nun and Howard Stern's Private Parts.
Oh, wow.
It wins that tie because my score of a 68 for Apocalypto is the highest of all of those movies. It is 17th from the bottom of our list. 7 is still in 7th and won't be challenged this week, but I like this movie we're talking about.
Me too.
Yeah, Freaky. What did everybody think of this?
It's enjoyable. I didn't mind watching it a second time and paying for it a second time either. I'm not mad at it. And like
I'm
Vince
glad.
Vaughn, I enjoy.
When I saw that they're still charging the $6.
I was so mad, though. I was a little bit like,
Yeah. A little greedy. I'm like, this movie's gonna be hitting like a premium streaming service
right
within the next 2 months. Like, relax about it, guys.
Exactly. I still feel like
I'm
that
glad you like it.
Well, I feel like certain platforms should give you like a discount. Like, if you rent it and then you decide to buy it, like, they should deduct that rental from the full price.
I completely agree. Also, if you buy something in like standard definition, I know no one does that anymore, but Colin did it in 2006. You should be able to upgrade
right
to better for cheaper. It's
exactly
ridiculous.
Also, loyalty programs that like actually make a meaningful difference. I'm now in, because I collect things to cope with my stress. Now I'm in the Criterion loyalty program, and it's like you get a big discount after 500 points. How do you get a point? Spend a dollar. I'm sorry. I have to spend $500 before there's any. No, get to do a real loyalty program.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane.
I mean, Criterion people buy a lot of things, and some of those things cost $200. So, you know.
Sure.
I guess.
Yeah. What does this have to do with? Very little. Robin, you are the only one here who's coming to it for the first time.
Yes.
What's your initial take?
I liked it. It's not a movie that I would have chosen to watch. I'm not upset that I watched it. I
Good.
Have some notes, but they're not harsh.
Nice.
Great. Well, if you didn't get to this because, you know, there was a pandemic on, here's a recap. And it's Camila's turn.
And we're coming in cold.
The most... Oh, well, I mean, on the surface, you're the most qualified, I think.
Yeah. But not today specifically.
Well, let's see how that works out. And go.
It's Wednesday the 11th, and horny teens tell spooky tales about the Blissfield Butcher. Somebody's dad is an art collector and has some ancient knife. Surprise, the butcher's there. Broken wine bottle down the throat, death by toilet seat, tennis racket in the dome, and murder is as an art piece. The knife calls to the butcher and he takes it. Millie is a normal teen. Dad died, mom drinks. She's not popular, but she has friends. She has some problems at school, asshole teacher, and bitchy mean girl. She has a crush on popular Booker. Mom doesn't show to pick her up after the game. The butcher's there. He stabs her with his new mystical knife. Her sister shows up. She goes home, goes to bed, and the body switch happens on Friday the 13th. Murderer makeover. Butcher Millie kills Millie's problems. Millie Butcher finally explains the situation to her friends. They have until midnight to take the switch back or it's permanent, so they have to get the knife. Chasing, hiding, uncomfortable situation with mom. They catch Butcher Millie and explain the situation to Booker. Self-reflection, awkward car makeout, an escape, justifiable slaughter of high school rapists. The switch is made. Millie gets Booker and her body. The butcher attacks Millie and her family and she kills them. She kills him. It's Freaky Friday meets the hot chick traumatized by Friday the 13th as Michael Myers watches.
Perfect. 60 seconds on the dot. The platonic ideal of the 60 second recap has been achieved. Poor Freaky. Yeah, how many things is this a tribute to? Because,
right?
Like, it's, I think I said when I first saw that this is more of a Friday the 13th movie than many Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah.
Everything about the villain, other than the fact that eventually he talks a little bit, is just Jason. There's, you know, a lot of Halloween, a lot of Scream, a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street. The mother character is just the mother from Nightmare on Elm Street. And, a half dozen other slashers, none of which are Freaky Friday, the movie that this is most directly a riff on. This is an interesting pastiche.
It is. As many of those horror films that it gives a nod to, it could have come off much cheesier. Like, it was done in a nice, seamless manner as to where it's like, you get it, it's like, oh, okay, got it. But it's not like, oh my God, okay, we get it. Can you have an original thought? So that's like one of the reasons why I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it really doesn't feel as much of a retread. Like, it feels more fresh than it really has any right to.
Right. And I want to give, I think I give a lot of credit to the little girl who plays Millie. I didn't look up her name, but
Catherine Newton.
Yeah. Okay, so
who has liked one of my tweets.
Oh, look at that. All right, well.
Because this is the story there. Hang on. So we talked about this, I think, when you reviewed Freaky in the You Hit Can't Handle the Truth segment. But in 2017, there were like 15 different actors who were in multiple Best Picture nominees. And I like listed them all out. And then I was like, but I don't think there's any women actors. And so, as I tend to do, especially when I am in hypomania, I went on a deep dive at IMDb and found that Catherine Newton is in Lady Bird and Three Billboards. Oh. And she liked my tweet.
Aw. Oh,
that's nice.
It is. So, she's
had a little, she's already in the middle of a career. I mean, she was on Big Little Lies. She was on,
that's right.
Supernatural. She was on, was on Supernatural. She was on Halt and Catch Fire. The aforementioned two Oscar nominees from 2017. She's the lead in Blockers, which is a good movie.
Yes, I enjoyed that movie.
So yeah, I give her a lot of points or a lot of credit for her ability to portray the butcher the way that she did. Like just being that whole, the first scene of her waking up and she feeling like looking all disconnected from her own body. Like
yes.
That's like, that was great. I felt like she did an amazing job.
I completely agree. And also, like, one of my notes is I feel like this movie might have worked a little bit better if they had someone scarier play the butcher before the body swap. Like, I know this is kind of weird to say considering Vince Vaughn has literally played Norman Bates, but like, I just don't think he's scary.
There were certain things that I've seen him in that I feel it's almost there. I like Clay Pigeons.
Okay. I was thinking about that. I'm like, I know that there's a movie from 20 years ago where he's scary and I couldn't remember what it is. I think is Joaquin Phoenix also in that?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I don't know. He seems kind of goofy. It might just be, it might be a function of the device also where he spends half the movie playing a teenage girl.
Right. But it's also that I think that like Vince Vaughn is concerned, like I said, like almost scary, but for the most part, it's just like, he's got that dick asshole thing down pat.
Oh, for sure.
Like, so it's like, that's always there no matter what he's playing. So yeah. Is he like scary because he's like 6'9"?
I love when he or she, it's pronouns are confusing when talking about this film, which they make a joke about.
Right.
She says, I'm a giant.
See, I think it works, and I'm not like a big Vince Vaughn fan. Like I could usually take him or leave him.
Yes. Yeah,
maybe that's why I think it works, because he's had Jason's physique all along. Like he already brought that to the table. And I don't know. I'm sure you could have, but I think you would have had a much harder time finding someone who is that physically imposing and could also play Millie for half the movie and pull it off.
Yeah,
if you had Kane Hodder or Tony Todd or, you know, a normal Jason type in here, they wouldn't have been funny, you know, exploring what it's like to pee standing up.
That's such a great scene.
And also, I think, again, I'm repeating something that Camila said when she first talked about this. I really appreciate that he didn't go for the low-hanging fruit of playing a teenage girl, like, you know, using an airhead voice. And he just seemed like the character. It's a really good performance in that way.
And I think one of the big things that makes it really, like, beside him not doing the whole airhead thing, is that, you know, he has, like, the subtleties, the little movements of a girl, like the little run that he did across the street. But it was also, like, it's established early on her tick of biting her nails. And so he keeps doing that. And there's also, like, a couple times, like, the fake put your hair back behind your ears, like the non-existent. So, yeah.
Well, let's go through some facts, because this is a weird case. This was a mid-pandemic number one.
Is this the first one that we've done?
Yes. This is the first time we've crossed. I think this is the most recent movie we've ever done. And it's the first time we've crossed, you know, into 2020 at all. A general note on that, we covered this a little bit throughout last year, but there are 3 or 4 months where the box office charts are utter nonsense. you know, basically nowhere was open, but there was never a point where nothing was open. So some things were reporting things that mean absolutely nothing. If you look at Box Office Mojo, there's like this documentary where a guy, the guy who made the documentary, rented out one screen and paid $1,000 to rent out that one screen was the number one movie in America because there was nothing else. We're ignoring all of that. There's too many problems with it, you know. In addition to the fact that nothing was really open, and none of those could conceivably be called the number one movie in America, for a while, the studios were either not reporting what was happening, you know, in drive-ins and the few little places where there was a movie theater open for some reason, they just weren't saying what was going on, or they were lying. There's a big thing where, like, everyone who was kind of looking at the numbers were like, several of these Tenet weekends are just made up, you know? And for those reasons, there's a long stretch where we just don't count anything. I think we said last summer that as soon as something was in wide release and made $1 million, we were going to start counting again. That happened the weekend of August 21st. Unhinged made $4 million that weekend. And before that, whatever, you know, every week, the number one movie between the beginning of the pandemic and then, it was probably Jaws or Jurassic Park or Empire Strikes Back or whatever throwback thing happened to be playing on 50 different drive-ins and thus made some money. Does that cover that stretch of time?
I believe so. Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking about it this whole time. Yeah. But if this is your first episode, if Vince Vaughn is listening, that's what our take on mid-pandemic box office reporting is.
Hi, Vince.
Hi, Vince. Thanks. But that, it really did resume. Everything after August 21st, I think, counts, with the exception of some Tenet chicanery. Freaky was released on Friday the 13th, and 13th of November last year. It was the eighth mid-pandemic number one movie in America, according to what we're counting. Starting with Unhinged, the others in between were The New Mutants, 5 weeks of Tenet, maybe, The War with Grandpa, 2 weeks of Honest Thief, Come Play, and Let Him Go. Freaky won its opening weekend with $3.6 million. It was definitely in theaters. It played on more than 2,400 screens, which is a perfectly respectable number. There were just very few people in those auditoriums. The per-screen average was about $1,400. For a point of contrast, the number one movie in America 1 year prior was the debuting Ford v. Ferrari, which won $31.4 million on 3,500 screens. So,
and that's that a low weekend.
Yeah, that's fairly low. And yet that per-screen average was $9,000. So Freaky was on like two-thirds the normal number of screens, but only made like a seventh or an eighth the amount of money that even a low-hanging winner would win.
Right.
You know, because most of these were movie theaters that opened and everyone went, I'm not going in there. There's a pandemic right now. Right. Sorry. And they all had, you know, a handful of people who showed up. Freaky won that weekend, won the next weekend, repeated as the number one movie in America. No other new wide releases. Earned $1.2 million in its second weekend. Lost the top spot the following weekend to Croods: A New Age, which won with $9.7 million. That was the biggest weekend of the pandemic to date. No, Tenet probably was. But who can say with Tenet?
Right.
That was Thanksgiving weekend. Croods would win the next 2 weeks. Somehow it won two more weekends just in February, when more theaters started opening and there was only one family movie out for a couple of weeks. The total for Freaky, then, is about $9 million. How does that stack up against other COVID movies? Looking just at 2020, because by 2021, things were starting to get normal and most theaters were open. Officially, Freaky is the 34th top grossing film of last year. Most of those were pre-pandemic. The top seven were all out before COVID hit. Of the top 35 movies of last year, 19 of them made most of their money before COVID.
Wow.
Another three made a decent chunk of it right before lockdown, like we're out 1 weekend or 3 days before lockdown. So Freaky is probably the 12th biggest COVID-era movie. Number one is Tenet. It probably made $58 million. Croods 2 made about 56. The others that did better than Freaky are Wonder Woman 1984, New Mutants, The War with Grandpa, Unhinged, Monster Hunter, Honest Thief, News of the World, Come Play, and Let Him Go. That'll be a weird chart someday. The most successful movies when there were no theaters.
right.
It debuted on video on demand in its fourth week of release. A whole other can of worms. Expect more of that in the future. And just some fun facts. Freaky is from director Christopher Landon. His most high-profile other stuff is Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
And he really wants to push that this is a shared universe and these blondes will meet one day.
I liked those movies.
Colin just got a little hard. Colin is obsessed with the movie Happy Death Day, and he also really likes the sequel. And while we watched this movie yesterday, he talked about it several times. He was like, why didn't they just get the Happy Death Day girl to do this? And now we know.
Yes. I like the idea.
Right, Catherine Newton was amazing.
Right.
But yeah, he's obsessed with those movies. And I think they're good. I really liked the first one. I thought the second one was overhyped by Colin to me. So I didn't enjoy it as much as I might have.
No, but it was a surprise to me. Like, I think I watched it reluctantly. It was like, you know, okay, it came out around my birthday. And I was like, this is the only movie that I would even kind of want to see right about now.
Right.
So, okay. And I was like, oh, all right. It was not as cheeseball as I expected.
Well, so that actually leads... Are you finished with Faxy? Should I put a pin in this?
Mini pin. By the way, the working title was indeed Freaky Friday the 13th. They thought, two on the nose.
Yeah.
When it went into production, there was a online rumor that what was being made was a full reboot of Scream. People just kind of looked at the circumstances and was like, oh, they're rebooting Scream. This is it, being filmed secretly. And that wasn't true, but it makes sense. And finally, some studios did start to report grosses for their re-releases during the pandemic. Not everyone did. It was mostly Disney, actually, said how much whatever they rolled back out made that weekend. So officially, on the record, there are weeks when Freaky outgrossed Guardians of the Galaxy, Toy Story, Elf, and Frozen.
Oh,
so
man.
Just tell people that. Just no context. Explain
right.
that to people. Back to Happy Death Day. Mary Beth is also obsessed with Happy Death Day. It's popular among You Can't Handle the Truth, Significant Others. I mean,
Dan. He does. I mean, he enjoyed them. I would be the Mary Beth or Colin in this situation.
Okay. Right.
What I was going to say is that my other big note for this movie is that the grossness of some of the murders felt forced.
Hmm.
Like, especially like the toilet seat murder right at the top. Like that kind of, I was like, oh God, is this what we're in for? And then they kind of went away from it because the character stuff is what is driving this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of was like, why even do it at all? Why have gross out stuff in this movie? And I was like, did Happy Death Day have gross out stuff? I don't remember it having gross out stuff.
I don't
so
recall
it's,
that.
You can do it.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. I have nothing for that.
Also, do high schools really have cryo tanks?
Yeah, I was wondering that. And like, also, why is there a setting to go all the way up to freezing like that? Yes.
In case the Terminator comes into your school?
And why does a man who lives in an abandoned old mill... By the way, more old mills in movies, please. I missed the presence of old mills. Used to be a bigger factor.
I laughed out loud when they said old mill.
Right. Why does he know how to go beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, and make a cryo tank?
Exactly. Like, I would be like, what is this? Looking for a manual.
Does this do laundry really right. quick? What does this thing do?
It's like, you guys have the biggest, like, the raddest Slurpee machine in your locker room.
While acknowledging that Robin is the one of the three of us who would react to the relative gore level of this movie, here's what I think, take it or leave it. Like, this could explain it for you or not. There are so many Blumhouse movies that are rated PG-13, involve teenagers, and are kind of good. Happy Death Day is probably the best one of them, but there's like 15 under that heading. And, you know, they kind of by now have the reputation of being more for 14-year-olds out for the evening than right. for horror fans. So I'd imagine that by putting an R rating on this and putting, you know, genuine Michael Myers style kills in the opening reel, that's them going, also, we're a real horror movie. We're not Blumhouse Presents Truth or Dare or whatever.
Right.
But appealing to the horror crowd at the expense of the non-horror crowd.
And maybe also, just again, like another nod to like Jason and Michael Myers and all them, because I don't think there was really necessary for him to have that mask on the first part. And I think if he didn't while he was doing those killings, he probably would have come off a little bit scarier later.
That's a really good point. Because Vince Vaughn can make scary face.
Yeah. So, like, had we seen him without the goofy mask on beforehand, like, doing the murders, doing the crimes, maybe later on at the end of the movie, it would have had a little more of an effect.
I think you're totally right.
There you go. That one's for free, Landon.
Why is Camila not consulted on all of these movies? Hollywood.
Hello. Hello.
Take that for... I saw the working title as Freaky Death Day. So take that note for Freaky Death Day.
Nice.
I guess my biggest note is you could have trimmed this. Of all the things that could have been 87 minutes, and it's not that much longer. Like it's barely 145, but there was a surprising amount of fat in there. The first thing is that utterly pointless changing room scene, which I guess is just like, and we're nodding to Back to the Future too.
I loved, I thought of Back to the Future also, but I loved that scene.
I really liked that scene.
Oh no, I hated it.
Oh man. So
completely checked out.
Part of it is that I like that actress, Katie Finneran. I like that they let her be more than just the sad drunk mom.
Right.
Right. Like they gave her some complexity there. Also, I just think that that was really good work from Vince Vaughn playing both sides of the Back to the Future piece of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hats off.
It worked. It worked for you. Then good for it. That's
I think
fun.
What could something that could have been like cut out was I don't think like the whole everything with the jocks. I don't think that storyline was really necessary. Even
and the bully girl also.
Yeah.
Like, I guess they really wanted us to not feel bad when she gets frozen.
Right. There was just like some stuff like, hey, just so you guys know, this is the mean girl here. Just so just so we're clear. And also these guys are going to get like terribly butchered. I mean, and it's going to be justifiable. But it's like, you know, we could have just not had them at all. Any of the jocks.
I completely agree. I did like her line delivery of you make my pussy drier than sandpaper.
Yes.
And you couldn't get that line in a PG-13 movie, so there you go.
Okay.
you have to kill a bunch of people graphically to justify saying that line. See how, are there still mean girls? I mean, I guess we'll check with Camila in 12 years. But like in high school, like are like kids like too aware of bullying and woke and you know progressive in the sub Gen Zers for their like this felt antiquated. This felt like why is there 90s style jocks bullying children in this contemporary movie?
It may not be as common as it was back in my day, your day, but I still there's still trash bag people raising trash bag kids that are gonna still be doing you know this bullshit and bullying and stuff like that. So unfortunately, I'm sure it still exists, and it's probably even worse because of social media and our fucking cell phones, because it's nonstop. Because before, you know, at least like, you know, you go to school, you hear the bullshit, you get the crap kicked out of you or whatever. You can go home and you could be in your own world. But then you got like these kids nowadays who are just constantly texting and just fucking with kids online. And it's like, so hopefully I will not be able to answer that question in about 12 years. Hopefully that question will be, I don't know. My kid is too awesome. And she does. She stands up for the the underdogs and she's super popular and she's like really down to earth and she's smart and she's talented.
Hashtag be the Kaj.
Yes.
Exactly.
I'll tell you what there definitely isn't in the world anymore is store windows with televisions that let everyone know what's happening in the world of the thing. There are no TVs in any store windows anymore. We have to stop.
Exactly. Unless it's an art installation, this doesn't exist.
Also, have you literally ever, like, I've never been in a situation where it's like, there's a fugitive on the loose, and here's a surprisingly accurate police sketch.
I was thinking that too. I was like, wow, that's like the best police drawing sketch I've ever seen of a fugitive.
It was like a little unflattering, but like basically it's like Vince Vaughn sat for a portrait.
Right. It's like, yes, that's Vince Vaughn. Like, and also who was left alive to give the to give the sketch artist something to work with?
The guy who was like, I'll give you a blowjob for drugs. That guy?
That guy couldn't give an accurate description of himself, let alone. Right.
So does the kiss moment work? If you don't know what we're talking about, eventually Millie's crush gets mixed up in the wacky gang. And so Millie confesses her feelings and they have a moment while she's still in Vince Vaughn's body. And then they make out a little bit and stop because she's Vince Vaughn right now. And I was like,
do this again when my hand isn't bigger than your whole face.
Right. Now, see, like, there are two things that I was thinking during this scene. One, I was too busy wondering, how old is this child? Is this because I was concerned about what was actually happening, like, on set? It's like, is this an actual teenager or is he just like 21 playing a teenager? But then I was like, okay, but it also looked like, you know, with Vince holding his hand in front of their mouths, like they probably never actually touched lips. Two, I was thinking this would have been a really good turn of character if after, like, when he does this, this is a signal. He figures out, oh, I'm gay.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's why I wanted to kiss you all of a sudden at that point in time, because you were a dude now.
I also thought that was maybe coming, or at least he'd be like, well, I guess I'm bisexual.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I do think the moment worked. I had the exact same thought that Camila had of like, that's a fully grown man.
Right.
An overgrown man.
I will say that. One thing I liked about this movie is that with the main character is the only one who feels a little bit like this is a mid 20-year-old playing a teenager. Like the other teenagers straight up look like teenagers.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't happen that often. And
no.
Can we talk about Josh and his mom's family photos for a second? They're just like looking like straight up glamour shots throughout the house, just like sprinkled through, like they are posing for like their Broadway debut. Like this.
Oh, there are a lot of funny little details in this movie.
Yeah. It absolutely works as a comedy. I'm not convinced it ever works as a horror movie, but it doesn't really need to.
Which is why do I have to watch a head crushed by a toilet seat then?
Springs Robin right back to her original position.
Right. Right.
Leave the toilet seat deaths out of it.
I don't think you could impale, even with Jason's strength, I don't think you could impale someone with a broken tennis racket through their skull.
Right, yeah.
That's a lot. That's asking a lot.
Yeah, it is.
It'd be tricky. That's a challenge, certainly. Have a lot of that. What's that machine at the gym where you're kind of doing this? Yeah, you got to do
the
that
boob
a whole
buster.
Lot.
Boob
this
buster?
Is radio shot.
Yeah, that's right.
For those who, for those playing at home, it's the boob buster. You know what we're saying.
The constant question of the slightly husky gentleman: do I try to make my muscles larger or my chub smaller? Like, when will they meet in that general part of the body? What am I going for here?
Oh, so all around, like, as we go, like, Vince Vaughn, so Sean said you could take him or leave him. Robin, any particular carings about Vince Vaughn?
I feel like when he first started to be a thing, I really like tall guys. That's like my weakness.
No, I got you. I get it.
And so I definitely, you know, 13-year-old Robin definitely had a crush on Vince Vaughn when he first became a thing.
Same.
And then I kind of grew weary of him.
Same.
And then it came back around, I think is how it is. So how does that shake out? I could take him or leave him, I think.
Yeah, like it was like when he first came around and when I was like, oh, when I found out again, like you, when I found out his height and was like, oh, well, yeah, this is the guy. This is what I'm all about, this dude right now.
Yeah.
But then there was a point it was like he just kind of became oversaturated and it was just like the same dude all the time, same character.
Playing up his douchiness.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like Bradley Cooper, honestly. It was
a little bit,
like
yeah.
you're leaning too far into this part of you that I would rather you not have at all.
Right. Yeah. And then like he did the whole like sacrilege playing Norman Bates thing. And that was kind of like, we're going to have to take a break. I can't do this with you right now.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah. I am still pissed about it. I saw that in the theater. Don't even get me started on this. Mm-hmm. Fuck on that.
Oh, yeah.
Movie.
Me too.
I've never seen it.
Don't ever.
Why would I ever watch that?
I don't know. But just so we're clear, don't.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about Zack Snyder flexing. I mean, that was Gus Van Sant going, like, right? I'm just going to do this shit because I can. Every right. shot's going to be the same. I'm going to make it a little more horny, and that's the only change. Just going to do it for the hell of it. Let's
and
go.
And no.
Right. And then there's also a point where, like, you know, there's a scene that I swear was clipped directly from Nine Inch Nails' Closer video. For no damn good reason. There's like a split second of it. There's like a splice in there. I don't know.
Like my understanding is that the changes that were made are color, split seconds of cow mutilation, mm-hmm. and jerk off sounds.
And also little things like trying to, like, Julianne Moore, fuck her. There's a point where, like, they're like, oh, we have to go, you know, check on your sister and make sure, like, her sister's life is in peril. And she's like, hold on, let me grab my Walkman.
What? Oh my God.
And see, this is like what, 45 like, years I later? Think? Like 45 years later, I've seen this movie one time and I still remember this bullshit. This left a mark.
They're like, and hey, I know that we're remaking a movie from the 40s, but like get a little of your titty out while you're lying dead on the bathroom floor. Like not all of it, but enough.
So,
there's enough yeah. changes that it's like, I thought you were doing no changes. I thought the whole point,
right.
which was dumb to begin with, right. was that you weren't changing anything.
Right.
You got him jerking off.
The whole thing you keep talking about is shot for shot, shot for shot. It's not. Oh, yeah. My God.
How do we bring Camila's blood pressure back down?
So suffice it to say, Vince Vaughn and I are okay nowadays. He's no longer.
He's not a leading man. The thing that I didn't buy was when he was like the breakup. Like, well, that doesn't work at all. Because, unpopular opinion, Jennifer Aniston is also not a leading performer. And I don't get why people loved that movie. But, you know, I think he has his place. And that place is in moderation. And he's in a lot of movies that are very regressive. Like if you've seen stuff like The Internship and some of the more recent Vince Vaughn comedies, like he's in a lot of those comedies that kind of refuse to evolve enough for this decade. But, you know, I love him in Anchorman. Like, he's the perfect, like...
Yes.
B-grade Ron Burgundy. Like, yes, perfect.
Yeah, I've seen enough of his comedy, per se, as to where it's like, I'm more interested in seeing what he can do with, like, with something a little more dramatic. And even though, like, what was the show, True Detective? He kind of botched that season up, or I don't know. I don't want to put it all on Vince, because there was, what, like, Colin Farrell was also there, and whoever wrote it, like, I kind of gave up on that halfway through. But yeah, I would like to see him do more dramatic roles, or at least get really scary, like get a real like sociopath role in there.
I watched the first season of True Detective once, haven't revisited it, and have not watched any of the other seasons. So to me, it's a great show. That's to me, that's the core of the McConaissance. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure it holds up better than Dallas Buyers Club, you know? Anyway, we've been here a while. Let's rate it. I think this is a good movie. It's not going to make anybody's top 10 list of anything, but it's good. 71.
Nice.
Similarly, just a little lower because this is not my thing. 65.
Word.
Mm-hmm.
82. I think it would probably, as far as like top 10s, I think it would make a top 10 Vince Vaughn list.
Mm.
Vince Vaughn performance.
Sure.
Yeah.
I can see that.
You got to get real niche on that top 10 list. Top 10 Vince Vaughn movies where he plays a teenage girl.
Top 10 movies with freaky in the title. Yeah, it's going to make it. 72 and 2/3 is the score. That'll end up, you know, if not in our top 20, then certainly in our top 30. That is perfectly acceptable. So, the bingo card. I'm still looking for a crush. These kids are a little too young.
Yeah. I don't think was there a bicycle?
Don't remember a bicycle.
Nope. And I don't know where, was this Blissfield? I don't know where they're supposed to be.
It's ambiguous, I'm pretty sure.
Gotcha.
Would we count comedic actor in a serious role?
No, this is a comedy.
Yeah, I would call this a dark, a black comedy.
Yeah. All right, nothing. We got nothing.
Womp womp.
So no changes. That's all right. We had a boatload of bingos early in the year. Right. So let's move on to You Can't Handle the Truth. Robin, I understand you've seen some Oscar-nominated films.
Yeah, I feel like most of that will be covered in our last bonus episode, though. So if you want to know what I have to think about almost everything that got Oscar nominated this year, please go listen to me and Sean talk about the Oscars for at least an hour and 10 minutes and probably more like 90 minutes. I don't know how long the final edit will be. Other than that, I just want to say Happy Endings, the sitcom from about 10 years ago, is on HBO Max and it's delightful. Like, some of the jokes feel very 10 years ago dated. Like it does a little bit too much ironic racism, but it's a very pleasant and high jokes per minute comedy, and it really helped me whenever I had to watch a super sad movie to be able to have 22 minutes of jokes after it. So go check that out. That's nice. My recommendation for the week.
Nice.
Camila?
I would like to recommend that you stay away from the show Them on Amazon Prime. I did not finish it. I got to episode 5. The shit is fucking vulgar when it comes to, like, I can't see one more fucking racist slave trade fucking underground railroad. God, I just can't do it anymore. And like there it takes a lot, or just maybe it's just a specific type of trauma and horror and just gore that gets under my skin. And this one, and I'm going to spoil it. There is a death of an infant while his mother is being raped.
Why would you do that?
Right. Exactly.
Wow.
Gratuitous.
Wow.
Horrific imagery. And that's when, I was like, and I'm done. I'm out. This is where we part ways. And so.
Okay. Camila, did you know that it was going to, like, I was surprised you watched it because literally all I knew about this show was that it was getting attention for having like horrific racist violence in it and people. Right. Are pushing back against that, rightfully so, saying, right. Why are we watching this? Who is this for?
See, I watched it because, yes, I read about all that, but there was also, like, this supernatural part that was brought into it. And so, to me, that kind of, it was just like, okay, I want to see how this is done. Like, with the supernatural aspect, bringing into, like, the actual racism. Now, before the first 4 episodes before that, I'm not going to say were easy to watch either, because it's still like a bunch of racist slurs and racist shit that's going on, you know, it's supposed to be in the 50s or whatever. And it's still very difficult for me to listen to and watch, but I soldiered on. But then, like I said, like that was just like that was the stopping point where I couldn't. So yeah, you're right. Like, I don't, and also it was, as a black woman who is a producer on this. So my thinking was, there's got to be a point, right? There's got to be a reason. But I also found out that the only episode that was directed by a black person was the 5th episode, the one that was the most horrific, which is what?
What?
So, yeah, so it's just like, it's a lot, and I just couldn't do it anymore.
It's Lena Waithe, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which, again, I probably, like, you know, yeah, like Queen and Slim, I'm not going to get to it. But anyway, yeah. So
every time someone talks about Queen and Slim, I think about when you were like, I liked everything about it except for what happened in it.
Yeah, that seems
right. So, yeah.
Wait, Sean, what was that movie, the Australia movie with the woman going on her revenge mission? That was her getting raped and her baby getting murdered too, right?
Yes, The Nightingale.
I liked that movie.
But here's the thing:
from the director of The Babadook,
was it some? What was the imagery? Was it something that you saw? Because, you know, I watch SVU on a regular basis. So, right. Like, speaking of talking about fictional rape, does not necessarily tap on my nerve. It's the images right. that, like, they were fighting very hard to make sure this shit was, like, emblazoned into your brain for life, and it was hard to watch. Yes. It's not necessarily the subject. Like, this could have been done in a way where we don't see this trauma take place on screen. Like, just to know, it would have been bad enough to know that it was there. But to see it happen, that was the problem. So, I'm stepping off my soapbox now. Oh, wait, let's step back on. Don't watch it. Yep. Stepping off. And for something lighthearted, watch Thunder Force with Melissa McCarthy and Octavia right. Butler on, I think it's Netflix. It's just nice to see Octavia get to have some fun on screen.
I don't know if you saw the retweet that I did that Octavia Spencer caught the bouquet at Melissa McCarthy's wedding.
Did she?
20 years ago. What? How cool is that?
That's amazing.
I hated that movie, but maybe I was grumpy that day. I really hate the movies she makes with her husband.
You definitely have to be in the mood for some stupid comedy. Yeah. Where that's concerned. And like, it was just, I was in a place, a very particular place where I needed that in my life for those 2 hours, and it worked.
I was going to say, Camila, if you haven't yet, Angelica Bastien wrote a really good review of them on Vulture, which is, I'll send it to you. It's just kind of like, why are we doing this?
Right, right.
I'm the short reaction to that from me, and I haven't seen the show, is just to make the point, hey, if Camila or I tell you a thing is too extreme, right. it's too extreme, exactly. All right? Like, we can take it. And honestly, this reminds me of The Passion of the Christ. I'm going somewhere, I promise. You know, when people were like, hey, Mel, why is there an hour of graphic torture of Jesus? He was like, well, I really want people to feel and appreciate the sacrifice that Jesus made. We can do that without looking at it.
Right.
Like, I don't know who out there needs to see content like what Camila just described to understand that it's bad.
Right.
Passion of the Christ, that happened to a lot of people in Passion of the Christ. I happen to think, because they were church folk who hadn't seen Evil Dead, that they were just shocked and mistook that for a revelation. But yes, there is a segment of the population that, like, when they see something, it really hits home. But I don't think that justifies being like, here, have this in your entertainment.
Right.
In the way that Camila just described. Again, I haven't seen it. But occasionally I'll be watching, you know, any number of things. It often does involve sexual assault on screen. Where it's like, this, I know what you thought you were doing, but it isn't worth it. It's just not worth making me watch this.
Right.
I'm of two minds about it. We talked about last week. I'm like, I think that there are movies that are about, look at this horrible thing, usually something historical, where I do find some value in it being horrible. I also don't want to watch it.
Right. It's also, right. I think to me, it kind of feels like there's a small population as to where, and I know you had asked me, like, well, how can I watch Saw movies? And I thought about that long and hard too. And I think, like, with Saw versus, like, you know, those apocalyptic ones where people, like, lose their fucking minds, there's consequence in movies like Saw. And the other ones, there's no consequence. So, but also, like, there's a small population where you see, like, this, like, the episode of them that I watched, like, that happened to somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody's grandmother, great-grandmother, lived through that. And so that's, like, a real serious, like, for real trigger for somebody somewhere. So a lot of these historical traumas take place on screen, that's kind of the thing. And also, again, like, even, like, sexual assault and any other type of abuse that happens on screen like that, it's like, you know, there's a possibility that somebody is being triggered by this, with a personal connection to it.
Right. Also,
yeah, a lot has to do with tone and reality. I mean, Saw is basically a thought experiment. Right. You know, it's very clearly like, this is not reality. Right. You know, have fun with it.
Right. I also think that there's something to be said for, like, we've seen it. Like, we get it. We have the horrors of racism in, like, racialized violence are documented.
Right.
like that story has been told. So
How do I lighten the mood?
What'd you watch?
Here are some new movies. Stowaway on Netflix is another sad space movie. Yay! But it's a little bit more of a tense space movie.
Is that what you were watching, Robin? Because I saw you tweet about something.
Mine was The Midnight Sky, which is a sad Earth movie that also involves... Camila, there is a horror movie scene tucked away in the middle of The Midnight Sky, which is like one of the most upsetting on-screen deaths I've seen in a while. It made me literally feel sick.
Oh my God.
Man, space death is rough, right? Yeah. Remember the when shit went down in Gravity? Man.
No.
Stowaway is out this week. Stowaway is Anna Kendrick and Daniel Dae Kim and Toni Collette are a crew, and they're going to Mars, and they get up there, and they're like, oh, crap, there's another person on the ship. A guy got knocked out and is on this ship that will only support three people. It's a very tortured way to introduce the trolley problem onto a spaceship. So it's a little like, really, at every turn, but I liked it because I love space thrillers, and that cast is great, and it's well directed, and more well directed than it's well written. But yeah, it works, particularly for a 100-minute Netflix movie. It is right in the pocket of good pickup for Netflix. This is the kind of thing that should be debuting on Netflix.
Nice. I'll watch Toni Collette and just in about the, anything.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This is, I was today years old when I realized that she's really Australian, because she's always a different accent.
Have you never seen Muriel's Wedding?
This one, no, I haven't.
It was made before the year 2000. So.
You must watch it. It's so good.
It is very good.
She has her natural accent in this, and I was like, is this who she is? And it is. And maybe the first like proper neon release of 2021 is In the Earth. It's a pandemic era horror movie. You know, people go into the woods and bad things happen, but it's now. And I loved it. It's terrifying. It's gripping. It is most in the vein of something like Annihilation. It is in that new weird genre. Which is going to be a lot for some people, but it's right, you know, right where I live. And I went to a new drive-in. It's the Elm Road Triple in Warren, Ohio. So if you live in Cleveland, that's kind of close. And Youngstown. If you live in Pittsburgh, that's not particularly close. And if you live in between, it's very close. it's fantastic. It does well at everything, which is so rarely the case with a drive-in. It's not like a, you know, unique destination that you must visit, like the Mahoning, the 35mm one. It's just really good at everything. The picture's good, the sound's good, the snack bar's good. It's like, it has a great, flashy, fun neon drive-in sign. Like, you know, it's well-programmed. I went there and saw The Shining last week. That's the first time I've seen The Shining outdoors. And it's great. So if you live anywhere near that, go to it. I stopped in Niles, Ohio, which is like the next town over, because it was like a tiny sign that was like Niles, President McKinley Memorial this way. And I'm like, really? There's a full ass presidential memorial here in the middle of nowhere?
Dude got assassinated.
Right. And I was like, why is this here? Turns out he's from there. William McKinley was born in Niles, Ohio. And there are like five different McKinley memorials scattered around Ohio because he got assassinated. And Ohio was really convinced he was going to be like a major president in history. But it's weird. Like, you're in a little anonymous town and there's a very stately presidential memorial down the street from, I swear to God, the McKinley Laundromat and McKinley Bowling Alley. It's like, wow.
You guys are really... Really Wait. Driving this all the way. You're really milking this one, huh?
Yeah, stop on route to the Elm Road Triple. Let's not draw a movie.
Oh, that's
what
right.
drama in the fan vote?
This will be new to me. I didn't even check to see what won.
Well, here's what happened. So we had a four-way vote between The Craft, Private Benjamin, Witness, and Titanic. And Titanic and The Craft sort of came out pretty early on as contenders, and The Craft overtook Titanic for quite some time. And then Titanic had a late surge, and we finished our first poll with a tie.
Crazy.
And so we did a runoff vote. But we did that runoff vote the day that Twitter broke. And so it ended up being something of a secret ballot where I wasn't voting for the longest time because it showed zero votes.
Me too.
And because I was sort of torn on my vote, and I was like, my heart was telling me Titanic, but I wanted to feel confident that The Craft was going to win before I voted for Titanic, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I get it. That's where I was, but I had to flip a coin.
And so I was amazed to find out that everybody was voting and it was only showing them their vote, but
yeah,
they fixed it. And so the
none
final vote
know.
Of our runoff, The Craft won with 55.7% of 61 votes. And so we will be calling the corners in our next episode.
Well, it's, I mean, that's great, but also so close, Billy. So close.
So close.
So my college friend Shannon said, why not both? And I was like, listen, one of these is 3 hours long. You know,
right.
If they were two quick ones, that'd be another story. I voted for Titanic because I feel like that is a much more dynamic conversation, but more just because I watched The Craft, 7 months ago? And so
same.
I was like, I didn't, you know.
I watched The Craft two weeks ago, and I'm looking forward to watching it again.
Who does not want to go back to Scream, but a little bit different? Multiple Scream cast members in this movie that came out the same year as Scream. What a time to be alive.
Yes.
It was
brilliant.
So we will, with your guidance and with apologies to Witness and Private Benjamin, although I'm still entertaining that Witness bonus episode conversation because, man, I'm fascinated about Witness now. It'll be The Craft next week. But before we get back to it, who the hell knows what was the number one song a few months ago? This is harder than if it were like, what was it in June of 1987?
I know literally one song from last year, which I will now guess, which is Driver's License.
It was not Driver's License.
All right, I'm out.
I'm totally out. I don't even know who's doing what. Is it a Nas? Is a Nas X? Or is it a Jonas Brother? Is it a Selena Gomez? I don't Cake by the Ocean? I don't
That's probably like 5 years old. I know that it seems like that song is from yesterday. I bet it's 5 years old. I had heard this song before, but had never heard the name of it or the names of the people doing it. So it's hopeless. It's called Mood by 24K Golden featuring Ian Dior.
Yep.
Are you sure that that's not from some kind of neural net pop song generator?
Because that all sounds very made up.
I had heard
Cake by the Ocean is 6 years old.
And that's where I am. Like, I have no fucking clue.